As he drank, he imagined his withered cells revitalizing. "Not bad," he said, taking another slug. It was disjointing, a juice that tasted of beets. "Yeah, your people love it."
"My people?"
"She means whites," said Bastion.
"What do I owe you?" said Sam.
He hoped he had cash.
"Don't worry about it," she said, and waved them out of the store.
They got back into the car. Bastion pulled on his seatbelt.
"She likes you," he said.
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah, she charges everyone."
"What were you guys saying about me?" he asked. "That made you laugh. Something about college."
"Oh," said Bastion, laughing.
"She said I could maybe go to art school as long as I don't do anything stupid," he said. "Say, get a bunch of tattoos so I can't ever get a real job like you."
Sam laughed. "I told you she was cold."
Sam wondered if Bastion knew how lucky he was to have Luz, to have a mother who actually seemed to like you. Sam hung a right from the Taco Cabana and across the train tracks to a section of town so dicey it didn't even have a bar.
"Park here," said Bastion.
They were on a nondescript street near a chain-link fence. Bastion hopped out, leaving his skateboard in the car and slinging his backpack over his shoulder. He crawled through a clipped hole in the fence. Sam followed. Bastion scanned his surroundings quickly, pulled out a key, and unlocked a thick padlock on the middle door of a brown building that had graffiti on the front in white. NSB was scrawled in menacingly giant letters, and Sam wondered if they were going to get killed execution style for trespassing.
"Don't worry," said Bastion, about the North Side Bloods tag. "I put that there so bums don't jack my shit."
To Sam, it sounded like exactly the kind of genius plan that got you killed. The kid had made a huge deal out of whatever it was that he was going to show him. Sam wondered if it was a skate ramp or a meth lab. Sam followed him into the cool hallway, which smelled of wet concrete.
"Come on, man," griped Bastion. "Get your camera out. You need to be getting all of this."
The cavernous room was flooded with natural light. You couldn't tell from the street, but there were panes of glass high on the wall and the vaulted ceilings that served as skylights. It was a miracle that some hipster developer hadn't already bought the place out to turn into a design studio or a vegan co-working space.
"This is incredible," Sam said, panning the room.
"Roof leaks," complained Bastion, as if he were making mortgage payments on the place. In the middle of the space, there was a lone folding chair and paintings of varying size. The still air hung thick with chemicals, nail polish, or primer.
"So this is what I'm working on," said Bastion, gesturing at the canvases standing sentry.
"Other than becoming the Mexican Nigel Houston and getting that Nike SB money." The kid painted the same way he skated. The brushwork was confident, clear. The streaks and dabs made sense where they were and held your attention. There was a series of heads, misshapen with haphazard rows of teeth, another with angry marker cross-hatchings over brown faces. One said, "For Mom," on it, with the words crossed out, a mountain of angrily drawn tiny stick figures piled high with a series of interlocking rainbow hearts repeated over the image. What Bastion brought into the world commanded the space they occupied.
"Where do you get this stuff?"
Some paintings were the size of shoeboxes, others taller than Bastion at 6 feet. "I make the canvases," Bastion said, shrugging. He stared square into Sam's camera.
"They're such a rip-off at the art stores. Plus those snobby assholes hate when I come through. They follow you around like you're brown or something." He laughed.
"I rack most of my shit from hardware stores anyway," he said. "And you can steal wood from any of those big dumpsters when they're building new subdivisions, but you gotta go early."
"This is my prized possession, though," he said.
Sam followed him to the far wall. It was a silver and yellow circular saw.
"It's a meter saw," he said, pronouncing it meter saw.
Sam didn't correct him.
"For the frames."
He pulled out a box of acrylic paints and showed it to the camera.
"Shout out to Miss Mascari at Burnett Middle School," he said. "She gives me these because she's in love with me."
He smiled devilishly into Sam's phone.
"Why painting?" asked Sam, zooming in. "The god Basquiat, obviously," said Bastion.
He's legendary. Devin Troy Strother is the truth, too. And Warhol. Man, that creepy old dude was the G-O-A-T. He wasn't even making his own work anymore, and he still got paid.
Then Bastian got serious for a second. I hate Richard Prince, though, he said. He's a thief, and Jeff Koons is washed.
Do you learn about this at school? Sam asked.
Nah, said Bastian. Instagram.
Art was something Sam wished he knew more about. He felt too self-conscious to visit museums on his own and didn't know anyone who would want to go with him. Sam walked backward into the middle of the room so he could capture as much of Bastian's paintings in the frame. This moment felt important. A story he'd be telling someone someday in the future when Bastian was known by everyone and no longer remembered him. They walked outside and split a smoke. Sam shot Bastian, picking a fleck of tobacco off his tongue.
What makes you think you, of all people, get to be an artist? Sam asked, focusing in on Bastian's face.
Bastian exhaled a perfect circle of smoke. The kid was so famous already it was ridiculous. He tilted his head.
What kind of question is that? It's fucking art, man, he said, scowling.
You don't choose it. It chooses you. If you waste that chance, your talent dies. That's when you start dying along with it.
So he lets you hang out here?
Sam brought Bastian to house, where he promptly made himself very much at home. He was sprawled out on a sofa with his feet up on the coffee table.
You bring girls back here and party with them and shit?
Nah. Sam kicked Bastian's filthy sneakers off the table. I work here, man. You don't shit where you eat. Bastian surveyed the premises. Sam had promised to make Bastian pancakes, since that's what the movie's talent wanted.
But you have keys, so you can be here whenever you want?
Sam nodded.
It's cool that your boss trusts you.
Bastian nodded toward the fireplace.
That thing work?
Yeah, he said. We crank it up around the holidays. It gets pretty toasty. Bastian walked over to inspect it.
Yo, that's cool, he said, peering into the flue. You could make s'mores and shit.
For his big talk about girls and his budding career as the next Basquiat, Bastian was unmistakably still a kid. Sam pulled out a folder and handed it to him. I need your mom to sign this, he said. Bastian stared at it.
Yeah, whatever it is, she's not going to do it.
It's not anything crazy, he said. It's a release because you're a minor. Bastian took it and put it down on the coffee table.
Luz doesn't sign stuff, Bastian said again. She's an illegal. I mean, a dreamer or whatever.
But she runs the juice stand, Sam said. He knew about undocumented workers, only he never pictured Luz, someone who was the most momist-seeming mom ever, being one.
And her English?
Bastian rolled his eyes.
She's been here for over 20 years, dumbass, he said.
You can't tell anyone. It's effed up, and every day she's mad paranoid that someone's going to ask her for her papers. To Sam, it sounded like Germany in World War II.
That's insane, Sam said.
Still, he'd heard the news reports on ICE raids all over Texas, but had never properly paid attention. He hadn't had to.
Can't she apply for a green card since she's been here so long and you were born here? Sam asked.
Bastian shook his head.
Nah, she might as well try winning the lottery, he said. And with everything that's going on, if she gets busted now and deported, then what happens to me?
With the pity parties Sam threw himself on a weekly basis and the panic attack he had about being almost homeless and almost a dad, there was a woman and countless others like her with real problems.
Can't you fake it? Bastian asked. Shit, I'll sign it.
Don't worry about it, Sam said. It's not that deep. Sam had been on hold for 36 minutes when he realized it was that deep. Alamo Community College's film department was lax about everything except their beloved red tape.
The releases for your subjects and the rights for your work need to accompany the submission. The department automatically enrolls you into a series of fellowships and festivals along with...
The lady on the phone kept talking about the department as if it were some ancient secret society with fanatical rules.
So let me get this straight, Lydia, he said.
Lydia, that's your name, right?
Yes,
said Lydia. That's right.
So simply by turning in my project to get a grade, I'm automatically enrolled in this other stuff?
Yes.
What do you mean the rights for my work?
This is what I'm trying to tell you, said Lydia slowly. You grant ACC and its affiliates the copyright in the work, and the department is granted the exclusive worldwide right in perpetuity to view, perform, display, distribute, stream, transmit, make available for download, rent, disseminate, issue, or communicate copies to the public, telecast by air, cable, or otherwise import, adapt, enhance, show, translate, compile, or otherwise use in any media, and to adapt as a musical or a stage show.
Wait, he interrupted. A musical?
Yes, said Lydia. A musical.
If they turn my documentary about a 14-year-old Mexican kid living on the East Side painting pictures with his dirtbag friends into Hamilton or whatever, the department gets all the money?
The chance of that is slim to none, she said. Lin-Manuel Miranda is a certifiable genius, and you...
Lydia cleared her throat.
But yes, seeing as you've granted the department the copyright.
And I don't have to sign anything, he said. Just by turning in my project, they get to do this.
Well, turning in your project with the accompanying releases, it's very clear in the course curriculum. And as you know, your project is a large percentage of your grade, as determined by your professor, Dr. Lindstrom. I believe it's 80%, she said.
Lydia, have you met Dr. Lindstrom?
Actually, no, she said.
Well, neither have I, he said, and hung up. There was no way Sam was going to risk losing Bastion's future for this. Screw the tuition. Besides which, musicals were the worst.
Penny. Penny was anxious about seeing Andy. He'd texted her after asking her out, but she didn't know what to say. She didn't want to date him, that much she knew. But she realized that for the past week she'd been looking forward to class with nervous anticipation because he'd admitted to liking her. It was on the record and everything. She chose an extra clean pair of black leggings and showed up 10 minutes early. He came in just before the bell and sat in the seat in front of her. Penny noticed he needed a haircut. A 5 o'clock shadow crept south on his tanned neck. He was dressed in a white sweatshirt and matching white sweats and sneakers, and Penny couldn't believe how pristine it all was. He practically shone. Penny thought about how next year she might never see him again, and how future her would be pissed off at present-day her for screwing the pooch right now. She squinted forcefully at the back of Andy's neck. It was a good neck. His shoulders were killer, too. Muscly, but nothing that said vain or obsessive. As if he could sense her attention boring a hole at the base of his skull, Andy suddenly turned around. Shit. Penny bared her teeth in a rigid smile to indicate everything was perfectly fine. He turned back around and texted her. Wait for me after class. Okay, Penny. Am I making things bizarre, or is it you? They were standing on the edge of the quad lawn, though not far enough in that Andy would stain his shoes on the grass. It's probably you, he said. It's probably me, Penny agreed, and suddenly needed a nap. It was astounding the ways in which her body reacted to confrontation. It's not that big a deal, you know. Andy pulled a matte black cylinder out of his book bag, twisted the top off, and outslid a pair of sunglasses. He put them on. Penny was immediately struck by the competitive advantage of people not being able to see your eyes in a fight. Not that this was a fight. Or maybe it was. Penny had no idea. She made an awning with her hands and squinted up at him. Okay, so what's the protocol now? She asked.
Protocol? Andy laughed. Well, I think we still hold value for each other in our roles as cronies, colleagues, writerly peers.
This was news to Penny. Positive news. So we can still collaborate and talk about work? He nodded. Penny was elated. Because I need your help on Act Two, she said. It's a mess logistically, and there are certain inconsistencies I can't reconcile, and I made a spreadsheet the way you told me, except then I read this thing about how your narrative should be a snowflake, and I'm not that good at math.
Ugh, loser. Okay, send it to me, he said. I'll have it back to you by the weekend, but you have to help me with my dialogue. I'm holding your pages hostage until you get mine back. Penny duffed him on the arm as she imagined a pal would. I love the protocol, she said. Great, he said, socking her back lightly. This is probably for the best anyway. You're so strange. Penny practically skipped home. When she got back to her room from class, she was stoked to find Jude reading a magazine and eating goldfish. Sup, slut, she said before turning back to flip through the pages. Do you want to do something? Penny said, sitting on Jude's bed. Penny was still high from her talk with Andy. She was batting 1,000 when it came to friendship. I'll drive. Jude studied her face. Really? Penny nodded and smiled wide. What, did you and your secret boyfriend break up or something? Asked Jude. Penny kept her smile in place and barreled on. Going once, going twice, she said. Just kidding, yes. Jude sprang into action and tossed her magazine aside. I'm dying of boredom and have to read the Communist Manifesto by tomorrow, and yeah, no. Why isn't there an animated movie version? Penny shrugged. We gotta get Mal, too, she said. They swung by Twombly. Where are we going? Asked Mallory, jumping in the back. It was such a new dynamic to have Penny in charge of the night for once. I want to see the ocean, Penny announced. Yay! The girls chorused. Penny felt as if she could have suggested anything from the zoo to the airport, and they would have been game. The closest beach was 3.5 hours away, but Penny was hell-bent on making it to Galveston in under 3. Jude was responsible for the music and directions. Mallory was responsible for making them stop every half hour so she could pee. The girl had the smallest bladder in the world. Penny, I haven't seen you in 1,000 years. Mallory handed her a red vine. The only benefit to stopping every 30 miles was the snack haul remained bountiful. The party was so fun. Yeah, said Jude. Speaking of which, what's up with Andy? He's so hot. By dusk, they'd made it to the halfway point, where there was a glowing power plant up ahead. It was beautiful, like a space station on the cover of a sci-fi paperback from the 70s. Seriously, what or who have you been doing? Mallory poked Penny's cheek with a wet end of her vine. Stop, yawped Penny. Mallory cackled. Nothing, and yeah, Andy's great. He's helping me with my project. I wish he'd help me with my project, retorted Jude, and they laughed. I'm up to my eyeballs in homework and ignoring my mother, said Penny, same as everyone. Oh, said Jude, swatting Penny's arm. Your mom friend requested me on Facebook. Oh, shut up, Penny groaned. Yuck, exclaimed Mallory. That's such a violation. You didn't accept, did you? No, said Jude. I mean, Celeste is adorable, but yeah, no way. Obvious violation. She did it literally the night we hung out. Penny felt her cheeks redden. Did I tell you she sent Mark, as in my ex-boyfriend Mark, a message after we broke up? What? Not only that, Penny got worked up again, but she went on a full lurk and told me he was dating someone new. Why would you tell your daughter that? That's egregious, Mallory confirmed. Jude patted her shoulder in sympathy. Completely egregious. I mean, your mom's cool, but sometimes I can't tell if a cool mom is better than a completely out-of-touch Stepford wife mom like mine, said Jude. At least Nicole isn't thirsty. Well, she's obviously not hungry, agreed Mallory. I'm pretty sure the only food Nicole eats is Ativan. I love my mom. Mallory rummaged in her shopping bag for a bottle of Big Red. She's completely out to lunch, like all moms. I don't know, though. At some point in high school, we became friends. The thing is, P, you can't ignore them. Penny couldn't believe that the craziest girl in the car probably had the healthiest relationship with her mother. Moms are like cows, Mallory said. Jude shot a glance at Penny.
This was going to be good. You gotta milk them, or they lose their minds. Mallory leaned into the front of the car so the girls could feel the full weight of her wise words. They're shoplifting teens, she pressed. Wait, I thought they were cows, Jude said. Penny couldn't meet her eyes for fear of a giggle fit. They're both. However, they're more shoplifting teens because it's not about the intention, it's about the attention. That did Jude in. She cackled boisterously. What are you talking about? Wait, I actually think I know what you're getting at, Mal, said Penny. You're saying that ignoring my mom isn't the right way to go because her cow milk or need for attention or whatever gets insane and she'll burst or do something stupid. But if I pay consistent attention to her, she'll chill the F out. Exactly, said Mallory, leaning back into her seat, satisfied. There were worse theories. But what if your mom is the most annoying human in the universe? Asked Penny. Dude, Jude knew the answer to this one. Every mom is the most annoying human in the universe, but most of them, besides the super abusive, genuinely bad ones, are in your corner. You know what I do that helps? Apparently, Mallory wasn't done dispensing gems. I imagine how my mom would feel if she could overhear the mean shit I said about her. It makes me say way less mean shit, which makes me think way less mean shit. It works. Penny's heart sank. It would destroy Celeste to know how she felt about her and what she'd been keeping from her. Pushing her away was Penny's way of protecting her, of protecting them both. Okay, said Mallory, interrupting her thoughts. Enough about moms. We're going to play a game. We're going to go around in a circle and ask questions and answer them truthfully. So, truth or truth? Asked Penny. Yeah, said Jude. Although, I already know everything about Mal because she and I are the oversharing queens of the universe. How very dare you, said Mallory in mock outrage. Though in the spirit of full disclosure, everyone may as well know that I have a UTI and am drinking boatloads of cranberry juice because of the sheer volume of sex I had this past week, hence my current rate of peeing. Wait, I thought Ben left, said Jude. He did, replied Mallory. That's why it's a particularly sordid truth. J'accuse, exclaimed Jude. Okay, me first, said Jude, flipping on the dome light so the car resembled an interrogation room. Penny, she boomed in a TV announcer voice. Did you or did you not recently sleep with someone who was responsible for giving you that radiant, highly irritating glow? That was easy. No, she said. I'm dubious, said Mallory. Penny glanced at Mallory in the rear view. I'm a bad liar, Penny told her. That's true, confirmed Jude. And it's not Andy? Penny smiled. It is Andy, Jude swatted her arm. Penny wiped the grin off her face. It isn't. I promise. My turn, said Mallory. Wait, isn't it my turn? Asked Penny. She wondered if this was a thinly veiled attempt to ask her a series of deeply invasive questions. You'll go right after, said Mallory. Besides, this question is for Jude. I'm ready, said Jude, turning to her bestie. In a parallel universe in which the practice wasn't frowned upon and utterly appellation, would you or would you not have sex with Uncle Sam? Penny's stomach lurched. Ew! Screamed Jude. Mallory, why are you such a perv? I take it that's a no, said Mallory, grinning evilly. No, said Jude. I'm sorry, said Mallory, still smiling. I just couldn't stop leching on him this morning. He was making matcha with this little whisk, and he looked so deliciously annoyed. You do acknowledge that he's hot, though, like, objectively? Asked Mallory. Because I would bang the ever-loving shit out of him if he'd give me the time of day. Mal cracked open a bag of chips. Back me up, Penny. Sam's hot, said Mallory in between crunches. He's a type, Penny agreed. Great hair. Ew, no, guys, said Jude. And Mal, don't forget, you're promise-bound on pain of death, no banging. I know, said Mal. This is a hypothetical. Also, come on. I know he's technically not my uncle anymore, but I think of him as a brother. You wouldn't be allowed to bang my brother either, Mallory. You'd demolish him. Mallory sighed. It's true. I'm a man-eater. Okay, my turn, said Penny, desperate to change the subject. You guys are gonna make fun of me. Probably, said Jude, reaching back to grab Mallory's chips. She offered some to Penny, who shook her head. She felt as though she was constantly telling her no. Why do you guys want to know anything about me? She asked. The car went silent. And then Mallory started laughing. Jude joined in. How are you so awkward? Asked Mallory. Friends tell each other things, dummy, said Jude. And cello, we're friends. Why, though? Oh, my God, Penny, stop being so emo. Are you going to make us talk about feelings? Asked Mallory. Seriously, you are so homeschooled sometimes. Wait, what do you mean? Asked Jude. You actually don't know why anyone would like you? Yeah, said Penny. Genuine question. You guys are this official thing. You're a unit. But you keep asking me to do stuff even though I know I'm boring compared to you, and I want to know why. Mallory switched off the interior car light. Okay. Mallory took a deep breath. At the beginning, I only liked you as much as you liked me, which wasn't very much. That made sense. But then I felt bad for my dear friend Jude, who had to live with you. Mallory laughed. And I've always liked you, said Jude. You're mysterious. You're the hella metal dude in high school who's sexy even though he sneers and doesn't talk to anyone. But now I enjoy your company because you're smart, said Mallory. And dark, you do seem seriously tormented. And you're a good egg, said Jude simply. Penny crumpled inwardly when Jude said that. She wasn't a good egg. Penny didn't have to tell Jude everything, that she was desperately, hopelessly in love with Sam, but she should have told her they were friends. Penny knew it would hurt Jude to have been kept in the dark this long. Oh my God, can you guys smell that? Mallory rolled down her windows. Penny could hear the waves crashing in the dark. The moonlight turned everything blue. They got out of the car and stretched. The salt air was sticky. Do you have towels? Asked Jude, kicking off her shoes. Penny nodded. Mallory laughed. Of course you do. You're going actual swimming? Penny asked. Now? You're not? Jude said incredulously. It was your idea to come to the beach. She stepped out of her shorts. Penny handed her a towel. I wanted to see the water, she said. To be near it. It hadn't occurred to her that anyone would go in. Jude shrugged and ran to the water, whooping before diving in. Mallory watched her, looked back at Penny, and offered her a chip. Penny took a handful. Are you swimming? Oh, hell no, said Mallory. I only dip my toes in chlorinated water. They could barely make Jude out in the waves. Mallory hopped up onto Penny's trunk, and Penny climbed up next to her. She felt Mallory shiver slightly in the dark. Cold? A little. Penny grabbed her hoodie from the front seat, pulled her phone out of the pocket, and handed the sweatshirt to her. They huddled closer. She thought about how with Mallory, everything was even Steven. Affection, loyalty, even laughing at jokes. Jude was different. Penny could see now why they were so close. Mallory was tougher and looked out for her. They were a good team. They faced the water, feeling the breeze and listening to the roar of the tide. Isn't it appalling that she's friends with us? Mallory asked. Penny was strangely flattered to be a part of Mallory's us. She's so nice, said Mallory. Decent, you know? Yeah, said Penny. If there were an apocalypse tomorrow, she'd be out in the first wave. It wouldn't matter how fast or strong she was. Her heart wouldn't be able to take it. Mallory bumped her shoulder with her own. I love how this is where your brain goes, she said. I know what you mean, though. God, can you imagine? She'd probably die trying to save a bus full of orphans. Why would anybody save children during the apocalypse? Said Penny. For anything other than food? No idea. Penny smiled in the dark. Mallory took her hair down from a bun and shook it out. The wind was balmy on Penny's face. She was glad they'd come. After a moment, she shook her hair out too. I love the ocean. We're gonna have the best beachy waves. Mallory scrunched her hair and pulled out her phone. Get in this with me. The first shot with the flash was awful, straight up the nose with both of them resembling startled possums. Oh my god. Mallory laughed, deleting it. Tragic. Penny switched on the flashlight of her phone and illuminated them from an angle. No flash, only mood lighting, said Penny. Oh, you are resourceful, said Mallory. I would eat you last in the apocalypse. They tried another. Better. Okay, said Mallory, repositioning Penny's hand and tugging at her arm. Wait, seriously, is this as far as you go? What are you, some kind of midget T-Rex? Penny laughed. When Mallory made fun of you in this way, you felt like the only person in the world. Here, let's switch. Mallory became the flashlight as Penny shot. So much better, said Mallory as Penny swiped through the options. In fact, they were the best selfies Penny had ever taken. They were two giggly girls with great big hair doing irrepressibly fun things. Even without the pictures, Penny would remember this night for a long time. See, said Mallory. Look how good you look when you tilt your chin down like that. Oh my god, it's so cold! Jude breathlessly ran toward them. I knew it was gonna be a bitch when I got out. Mallory flashed the phone light toward her. She was shivering in her underwear. What happened to the towel I gave you? Asked Penny. Jude's eyes widened. Oh shit, she said, turning back toward the beach. Don't worry, Penny has an extra, said Mallory, hopping off the trunk. You do? Penny reached into the trunk for the other one and handed it to her. I knew it! Mallory clapped her hands triumphantly. Oh my god, you're so predictable. It's my last, though, Penny exclaimed. It required heroic restraint not to make Jude go back and hunt for its mate. Wait, I want a selfie too, said Jude, reaching for her phone. Give me, I want to check my face. Penny handed it over. Oh my god, said Jude, pawing through her hair helplessly. Drowned rat much? First wave of the apocalypse, muttered Mallory. Seriously, Penny said, cheesing. Look at you two all buddy-buddy, said Jude, eyeing them. Just then, Penny's phone pinged in Jude's hand. Penny, you have to change your ringtone, said Mallory. I have, like, PTSD from Apex. It's been my alarm all year. What psychopath uses Apex as their ringtone? It's such an alarm. What? Said Penny, reaching for her phone. No way. Apex is way too quiet for that. Apex kept going off in Jude's hands. Jude's face was lit up. Then she held the phone out so the other girls could see. Penny snatched the phone, but the damage had been done. She'd seen. Jude knew. Sam House. Today, 9:11 p.m.
Yo, 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 yo.
Come by.
I baked a sheet cake. Your favorite. Confetti emoji.
He'd written out confetti emoji since he was trying to quit using emoji because he thought they were emotionally lazy. Said Mallory quietly. What psycho sets their texts to preview mode? Penny grabbed her phone and shoved it into her pocket, plunging the girls into darkness. Penny weighed her options. Available means to eject her seat from crippling social trauma. 1. Jump into the car, lock the doors, race home, transfer schools before they return. 2. Lie her lying face off. 3. Just tell them everything. It was a simple, very long misunderstanding. Penny wondered if this canceled everything out, if them seeing the text meant they weren't friends anymore. Penny felt like her throat was closing. There was no escape. She felt nauseous. The waves thundered in her ears. "Jude," she said quietly. It was barely audible above the din. Penny wished she could sit down. Her heart was racing. "I'm sorry." "Wait," said Jude. "Sam House, that's Uncle Sam, right?" Penny nodded. There were rapid-fire questions of increasing volume. "Uncle Sam is your secret internet boyfriend?" "No, not exactly. Are you guys dating?" "We're just friends." "Well then, why wouldn't you say something?" Penny couldn't tell her that Sam didn't want her to. It would only make things worse. "Were you hanging out this whole time while he was avoiding me?" "No, we just text. We don't hang out, okay? We've hung out once, twice, technically." "Jesus, Penny," Jude said. "He's the guy, right? The guy you're into?" Silence. And from Mallory, "Why sheet cake, though?" "I told him it was my favorite." For some reason, the cake part seemed to piss Jude off the most. Mallory stood beside her with her arms crossed. Strangely, Mallory seemed more perplexed than mad, though there was no question whose side she was on. "I'm sorry," said Penny. She meant it. They rode home in silence. This time, Penny didn't feel sleepy at all.
Sam. 11:02 p.m. "Where'd you go? You okay? Cake was bomb. Saved you some." 11:49 p.m. "Hey, can't talk." 11:51 p.m. "Sure thing. What happened? Mom stuff?" 12:41 a.m. "LMK if you need anything."
Penny. The downside to Jude being chipper and easygoing was that when she had it out for you, you felt it. By day two of Jude giving her the silent treatment, Penny was distraught. As soon as Penny entered their room, Jude glared at her, cranked up her speakers, and turned away. Often she blasted god-awful dubstep mashups neither of them liked, which is how Penny knew Jude really had it out for her. When Penny left a banana on her desk as an offering, Jude rejected it. She refused it by putting it on Penny's work chair, so when Penny went to write, she sat on it. As tiny passive-aggressive revenges went, it was adorable, and it killed Penny that they couldn't laugh about it. Penny hit up her mom that afternoon. She'd been dreading texting Celeste, but she had to bite the bullet. "I'm so sorry. I won't make it tonight. I'm slammed with my creative writing final. Need to write 3K words by Monday. We'll make it up to you. Happy birthday." Celeste would barely notice Penny wasn't there. Last she checked on Facebook, the sit-down dinner had transformed to a cocktail fiesta with 45 guests and a norteño ensemble, Los Chingones, that took requests for live band karaoke. Live band karaoke. There was no way. Sam texted. "She blew me off for lunch." Jude wasn't talking to him either. "I called her." "And?" "Nothing." "She's so mad. Living in the same room is the worst." Celeste called. Penny guiltily sent it to voicemail. "I screwed up big, huh?" "Ugh, I knew we should tell her." The super shameful part was that Jude's rancor and Penny's guilt had the unforeseen advantage of helping her write. Penny spent the next few hours consumed by her story, and by 11:30 p.m. had completed whole new passages to send J.A. for her office hours the next day. When Jude walked in, Penny was startled out of her trance. "Oh," said Penny weakly. "Hey." Jude rolled her eyes. "Why aren't you going home?" said Jude. She grabbed clean clothes and angrily packed them into a bag. "I accepted your mother's friend request," Jude's stabs at vengeance continued to be the best. "Jude," Penny begged, "please talk to me. I know I should have told you. It wasn't on purpose, and nothing crazy happened. We're friends. It wasn't planned, and then we didn't know when to... Oh, so you're a we now." "Jude, I'm sorry," Penny said. "It's a misunderstanding," Penny pleaded. "It's not a big deal if you would let me explain." "I know it's not a big deal to you," said Jude, slamming a drawer. "I know intellectually that you're allowed to be friends with whoever you want. Same goes for Sam, which is why I don't get it. If you're just friends, if it's no big deal, why go through all this trouble of hiding it from me? It's like you're just shady to be shady, and I hate that." She zipped her bag up. "You know, I made such an effort to be nice to both of you," she said. "I invited you guys to lunch, dinner, movies. Would it have killed you to include me in your plans? You're both from here. Other than Mallory, I don't know anyone. Do you know what that feels like? God, you must have thought I was so annoying that I couldn't take a hint." Penny's heart sank as Jude shouldered her bag. Jude was right. Of course she was right. "You know you do this to everyone," Jude said, swinging open the door. "You do this to your mom, you do it to me, Mallory too, even if you don't care about her. You shut people out with no explanation. It's so rude and mean, and for what? For a guy who you know doesn't even like you like that?" Penny blanched. Spoken out loud, Penny's actions sounded pathetic even to her own ears. "I make a good friend, Penny," Jude said. "You didn't even give me a chance." Penny's phone rang. She glanced down at it as a reflex. "Christ," fumed Jude. She slammed the door behind her. The number was a 210 area code. Knowing Celeste, she was drunk dialing her, thinking she was slick by using a friend's phone. Either that or she lost her purse. Again. Penny answered.
"Hello?"
A man's voice.
"Hello?"
Penny bolted upright.
"Hi, is this Penelope?"
Penny's heart leapt into her throat. "Yeah," she said. "Is everything okay?" She imagined Celeste dead in a ditch.
"Penny, this is your mom's friend, Michael."
She tasted acid. "Is it my mom? Is she okay?" She pictured twisted metal, deranged gunmen, torch-wielding neo-Nazis.
"I'm with your mom," the voice said. "She's fine. We're at Metropolitan Methodist."
Penny's head cracked wide open, and all she heard was a lamb screaming. The hospital. "I'm coming right now," she said.
Good, he stammered. "She's fine, but, okay, I'll be here."
Penny did not know a Michael among Celeste's friends. Her mother had a rotating cast of besties, though Penny didn't have their numbers. Truth was, she was her mom's emergency contact, and despite that fact, Penny hadn't been there for her. Penny stared at her phone. She couldn't feel her face, and a wave of nausea engulfed her. Okay, she couldn't call Jude. Mallory was Jude's friend, so that was out. She called Sam.
Sam. Sam ran to Kincaid with his backpack. He didn't know why he'd brought it, only that they were going somewhere and that Penny appreciated supplies. He'd packed water, a Tupperware container of leftover sheet cake, spoons, an extra sweatshirt, and a hard case first aid kit that Al kept in the kitchen. Penny had said nothing of where they were going, though she'd been unnervingly subdued on the phone, robotic in a way that was worrisome. All he knew was that it had to do with her mom. Sam wondered how Penny would cope if Celeste died. As much as Penny complained about her, she would probably fall to pieces if something bad happened. Sam remembered one of their earliest conversations about Penny's mom. "Emergency Penny, October 5, 2:14 p.m. I bet I'm bad at death." "As in, you suck at it, therefore you're invincible?" "No, bad at processing it. Nobody I've been close to died." "Lucky. I'm great at death." In 10th grade, the uncle Sam was closest to died of cancer. The same summer, two of his friends were killed in a drunk driving accident. Sometimes I watch my mother sleep and pretend she's dead. I cry and cry and cry because I love her so much, but also don't want her to know. He'd thought about Brandy Rose and what he'd do if she died. I'd be all alone if she was gone. Penny was waiting for him downstairs when he arrived. Her hair was extra big. Penny threw a crumpled $20 bill at him, and it bounced off his chest and fell to the floor. She was wild-eyed. "For gas," she said. He picked it up and stuffed it in his back pocket as he followed her to the lot across the street. "Thank you," Penny said, handing over the keys. "I'm shaking too much to drive. I'm sorry." "Don't apologize," he said, and let her in. "My mom gave me this car. It's her car," she said, strapping into shotgun. "Did I wake you up?" "Nope." He adjusted his seat and mirrors and headed toward the highway. "You know it's her birthday?" Penny's voice bordered on hysterical. Sam kept his attention on the road, but he wanted to keep her talking. "Yeah, I do. Her 40th. I mean, technically her birthday isn't until tomorrow." Penny glanced down at the time and burst into ragged sobs. "It's midnight." It was 12:02. "Do you have a Kleenex?" she asked after a moment. "I forgot my sundries." Sundries made Sam smile. He handed her the backpack. "There's a black bandana in there," he said. Penny pulled out a spoon. "For cake," he said. Penny nodded, as if that made perfect sense. Sam reached over and rummaged until his fingers found cloth. He handed it to her. "You should have dedicated cases for things," she said. Sam nodded. "I'm going to wash this and give it back," she added, blowing her nose. "Penny," he said, keeping his eyes ahead. "Is your mom okay?" "Yeah," she said. "I think so. I didn't ask any of the right questions to Michael."
"Who's Michael?"
"I don't know," she said. "Some guy."
"Penny, why didn't you go to your mom's birthday?"
As far as he knew, she'd been planning on it. "I can't be around her." She turned toward him. "Oh, God, that's horrible. How could I say that right now? What if something really bad happened? What do you think happened?"
Sam shook his head ruefully.
"I don't know."
"You know what's so dumb?" said Penny quietly, sniffling. "And I know it wouldn't fix everything, but I wish I had a dad. Bet a dad would know what happened."
"You'd be surprised," said Sam, thinking about his own.
"God, remember when you were almost a dad?" she asked.
Sam smiled. "I might remember something about losing my mind on a daily basis for a few weeks, yeah?"
"I think you would have been a good dad," she said.
Sam's left eye missed it over.
"Yeah?"
He swallowed.
"Yeah," she said. "You'd be fun when you weren't the most depressing."
"And selfish," he reminded her.
"Yeah," she said. "And fainting. You'd be screwed if you had a daughter, though. You'd be wrapped so firmly around that kid's little finger."
"Yeah, exactly where a dad should be, holding a firearm and warding off potential suitors until that daughter is of consenting age," he said, "which in my book is about 46.
Penny laughed.
Sam's mind turned to Bobby. If Penny ever told him the guy's full name, Sam would hunt him down and string him up by his balls. "When did you start being so mad at your mom?"
"Ugh, she's so not a mom."
Even in her anguish, Penny couldn't keep the frustration out of her tone.
"You know, one time I ate it on a bike," she said. "Just scraped my entire face down the street. My whole face was hamburger meat with an eyeball stuck on, and instead of going home, I walked a block to my neighbor's house."
Sam nodded. Stories never started or ended where you'd think they would with Penny, but it was important to listen for when it came together.
"You know why? Because Celeste can't handle blood. In that moment, I knew better than to go home. I rang the doorbell next door and passed out when they answered. I figured that my chances were better off with anyone else's mom than my own. I was 6.
So that's where her eyebrow scar came from. They drove in silence for a few more dark miles. Parenting as a concept was wild. Everybody was winging it.
"You know,
I didn't have a bike, he said after a while. I was so poor my bike was an old bean can that I kicked down a dirt path just so I could have some fun getting from point A to B.
What?
Penny croaked, eyes wet. It didn't get me there any faster, but that's how it was, Sam said soberly. You know what else? I didn't even get to eat the beans out of it. It was a hand-me-down can of legumes. Penny laughed. It was a sad, snot-filled honk. So cry me a river, Penny Lee, he said.
It's true, she said. I don't know your journey.
Or my struggles.
True.
Real quick, he said. I'm headed south, but I have no idea where we're going. Penny handed him her phone with the map. They still had 40 more exits to go.
You know, she's supposed to be the one taking care of me, Penny said. That should be the basic qualification of being a parent.
I get that, said Sam. But sometimes it's so incidental that these people are the parents, beyond the biology of it. It's not as if they had to pass a test or unlock achievements to be the ones making the decisions. Sometimes they're actually stupid, certifiably dumber than you. But as their kid, you'd never think to know that. Sam thought about how scant his own qualifications had been. They stopped for gas, arriving at the hospital an hour later. Sam drove into the covered visitor's parking lot, killed the engine, and awaited further instructions.
Do you mind waiting out here? Penny asked.
Not at all. Sam was relieved he wouldn't have to deal with whatever family drama was awaiting her, though he would have joined her if she'd asked. Before she hopped out, she hugged him.
Thanks, she said, and kissed him on the cheek.
Her nose was wet. It was very cute and completely beside the point. Sam watched as she jog-hopped through the sliding glass doors. He missed her the second she fell out of view.
Penny. The hospital smelled of hospital. The bite of ammonia that was so sharp you immediately wondered what odors it was masking. Penny's eyes darted around the intake area for someone to talk to.
Penelope?
A thick-set, handsome Mexican dude in ostrich leather cowboy boots walked toward her purposefully. Yeah? He stretched out his hand.
Michael, he said.
His face was marred with acne scars, but it only added to his rugged appeal.
I recognized you from the picture on your mom's desk. They wouldn't let me go up with her because I'm not family.
So she's not dead?
No. God, no.
Is she hurt?
No, not exactly.
Penny shook her head violently. She needed information way faster than he was dispensing it.
We had dinner. The band was excellent. It was time for dessert, you know, coffee, cake, sopapillas. It was that new Tex-Mex place downtown with the murals.
Okay, Penny said, trying not to throttle him. You're too slow and inefficient. Did she get food poisoning? Michael shook his head. Was there a car accident? He shook his head again. Is she drunk?
No, he said, and cleared his throat. She ate a weed brownie.
Penny couldn't believe it.
What? Are you kidding? She seethed.
Michael glanced around nervously.
What are you guys, like 12? She'd never had them before, he whispered. And she ate a whole one, and then everyone was dancing, so she forgot and ate another part when we all told her you were only supposed to eat, I don't know, a quarter or an eighth.
Are you high? Asked Penny.
No, said Michael, insulted. I don't do drugs, nor would I ever drive under the influence. I just snuck her out because she was panicking, and I brought her straight here.
Okay, Penny breathed. So she's not in surgery. She didn't have a horrific accident. She's not poisoned or dead. She's just exceptionally stupid and immature, even though it's her 40th fucking birthday. Penny felt bad about cursing at a stranger, except that the power dynamic here was clear. Michael and Celeste were in big, big trouble.
I thought you should know, he reasoned. If it was my mom, I would want to know. Penny was certain Michael's mom wasn't nearly as harebrained and melodramatic.
"Also, your mother and I are dating," he said. "I don't know if that's appropriate for me to say."
"How old are you?" she asked. Penny would have guessed 25.
32. How old are you?"
he asked. 18, she said. "Are you married?"
"No."
"Okay, well, it's nice to meet you," she said begrudgingly. And then, because there was nothing else to do for it, they shook hands. His palms were calloused.
"You too. Circumstances notwithstanding," he said solicitously. "I hope I did the right thing."
Penny rolled her eyes and sighed.
"You did," she said.
"Thank you."
She insisted someone tell you not to come to the restaurant.
"Okay," said Penny. "Thanks." She checked in with the receptionist, a short black woman with freckles even on her lips. "Can you tell me the status on Celeste Yoon? I'm her daughter." The nurse checked her computer. "We're observing her," she said. "She's on the third floor, and she's fine. We won't be keeping her overnight. In fact, we're wrapping up paperwork right now, and she'll be discharged shortly." "Thank you," she said, walking back to Michael. "She'll be down soon," she told her mom's boyfriend. He exhaled audibly. "I'm going back to school."
"You're not staying?"
he asked.
"I'm sure she'd want to see you."
"Nope," said Penny. "I'm all set." Penny wasn't interested in wasting any more of her time in this fantasy land of headassery, where the adults were large babies. When Penny got back to her car, Sam wasn't in it. Honestly, it was like herding cats with these people. Sam popped out of the shadows.
"Sorry," he said. "I had to pee."
He looked mortified. Penny started laughing. Her anger dissipated at the thought of Sam waiting in the car, executing complicated equations of whether or not he should go inside the hospital to pee, or pee his pants, or pee in a darkened patch of parking lot. It had probably taken him a good 10 minutes to figure it out. The image was hysterical, and once Penny got going, she couldn't stop. The stress of the past few days between Jude's rage and her frustration at Celeste and the relief of her not being dead was too much. Penny gasped as her body shook with laughter, eyes streaming. Sam watched her like she was nuts.
Sam. He couldn't wait to go to sleep. The drive took 3 hours round trip, and when he turned onto Penny's street, she touched the back of his hand. "Can we go to your house?" she asked. Sam looked at her questioningly. "Jude," she reminded him. He nodded and headed for house. They only had a few hours before Sam had to get up for work. The two of them trudged up the porch stairs at a glacial pace. Sam turned on his lamp and sat on his mattress. He undid the laces of his left boot and then his right, feeling as though he were performing a slow, tame striptease. Penny yawned as she sat beside him and took off her high tops. She was wearing frilly white socks with embroidered strawberries on them and cartoon squirrels on the heels. They both stared down at them.
"I forgot," she said. "These are secret socks."
Sam thought about the secret sides of girls and how much he loved them. "Do you want the bed and I can take the floor?" He'd have to give her his only pillow.
"I don't want to kick you off your own bed."
"Do you want a glass of water or anything?" he asked her. She nodded. Sam figured she could sort out where she wanted to sleep while he fetched it. When he returned, she was under the covers on the side closest to the wall. She'd left him his pillow on the outer side.
"Is this okay?"
she asked, sitting up to drink the water. He nodded and got under the covers. Since she was fully dressed, he kept his clothes on, too. He turned off the lamp.
"I've been meaning to ask you," he said groggily.
"Hmm? How do you think I should decorate?"
"Good question," she murmured. "I know how disappointed I was that there wasn't a giant black light swastika above your bed. I thought I knew you."
Sam smiled. They were quiet for a while, and he drifted.
"Maybe a velvet painting of juggalos," she said, waking him up. They both lay there with their eyes closed, smiling into the dark. "Is your mom okay?" he asked.
"Yeah," she said, "except..."